Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello and welcome to Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio, the world's number one health talk radio and podcast platform. This month's series is proudly sponsored by Dantec. It's Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, a time to get talking, get screened, and face a topic many of us would rather avoid. These conversations matter all year round, not just now in April, because early detection can truly save lives. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Gillian Matthew. Gillian's story is one of courage, resilience, and turning challenges into purpose. Diagnosed with stage 3 bowel cancer during the chaos of the pandemic, she faced major surgery, chemotherapy, and a permanent colostomy. But Gillian didn't stop at surviving. She has dedicated herself to helping others, from volunteering and writing for Colostomy UK's Tidings magazine to becoming an ambassador for Dantec. She's showing that life after stoma surgery isn't just possible, it can be positive, active, and full of hope. And speaking about Dantec, they're more than just behind the scenes. They've partnered with Stoma for Life to bring this special series to life. Their mission is to give people living with a stoma more confidence, more choice, and support every day. From innovative care solutions to educational resources and guidance, they help ostomates live life without limits. So let's hear Gillian's inspiring story. Welcome to Stoma for Life, Gillian Matthew.
Hi, Rafaela. Really nice to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Now, under Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, this is what brings us together. Let's start by painting the picture of what your life was like before your diagnosis.
So I was diagnosed in my late 40s. So I was fairly active. I was doing quite a lot of exercise, actually. I was just, you know, getting to the age where you think, oh, I need to start doing a bit more. So I was doing quite a lot of running and things like boot camps and, yeah, just I have a dog. So, you know, lots of walking, and things were going really well, until I started noticing, you know, a few symptoms. But actually, I still felt fairly well, which is a strange thing.
What symptoms did you notice?
So I had started noticing a bit of blood in my poo. Mm-hmm. And also my bowel habit changed quite a bit. I had sort of fairly regular patterns, and it did change quite a bit. I felt like I wasn't always passing. You felt like there was more to come, but it wasn't coming, wasn't coming through. That was the main symptoms. They're two of the main symptoms. I also did feel a bit tired at times, but nothing major that kind of really rang alarm bells. It was more the other two, the blood in the poo and the change in bowel habit. The other couple of sort of main symptoms are weight loss and pain in your tummy, or sometimes you can feel a lump, but I didn't have any of those. But I suppose when you see blood in your poo, it is quite alarming. But yeah, it wasn't happening all the time, but enough that, you know, I knew it wasn't quite right.
I suppose you got to a point where you can't explain it away anymore and you can't ignore it. And that's why I'm all about being active. And once you cannot ignore those signs, you have to become active. So talk us through what happened next.
Yeah, so this had been happening for, as I say, it wasn't happening all the time, but it was kind of on and off for maybe 3 or 4 months. And I think maybe the blood was getting a bit more frequent. So that's when I really thought, right, this is something I definitely can't ignore. So I went to my GP to discuss the symptoms with them. Luckily, I've got a very good GP practice, and the female GP that I saw at the time was very thorough, took my symptoms seriously. Because I think, we do hear that, I think you're classed as young for bowel cancer if you're under 50, which I was at the time. And, people aren't always taken seriously because they think it's just a thing, like even doctors think it's something that just happens in older people. So luckily, yeah, she took it very seriously, sort of asked various questions, did a quick exam, but then she referred me straight away for a colonoscopy. And, it was an urgent referral. So I got it actually within a week and a half, which, was slightly alarming for me because I thought, oh, I was still thinking, oh, it can't be that serious. I mean, I was kind of aware of bowel cancer and some of the symptoms and, thought, oh, it potentially could be that. But you always think, oh, that's not going to be me. I was kind of hoping it wasn't going to be that, obviously. But yeah, it was very quick that sort of started getting sort of further diagnosis. So yeah, see, that was a week and a half later, and that was just around sort of getting towards later. So it was early March. So things were, there was quite a lot of information on the news about the lockdown, and we still weren't sure what was happening. Not lockdown, but sorry, COVID-19. Still weren't really sure what was going to happen around that. So you were starting to see, notices up in, when I went to get the colonoscopy, there was notices up about, sort of being careful. And if you've been, I can't remember now, but there was a few sort of countries, if you've been to those, to let the staff know and all that kind of thing. But that was still happening. And I think actually it wasn't possibly like a month or so later that they weren't doing colonoscopies after that, because I thought that they felt there was maybe a risk of passing on COVID doing those. So I think I was really, I was glad I went to the GP when I did anyway, but because of COVID-19 as well, I was really glad that I acted when I did. And there was still those diagnosis tests available for me.
I mean, it was a scary time. We all know. I mean, it's not that long ago, and we will always remember how helpless we felt when this all started, because we all had no idea. And then on top of that, if you get or potentially have a cancer diagnosis, you're actually left in limbo because you don't know what's happening with lockdown, like you said. So I can imagine it must have been a very scary time on all levels.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very surreal time for everyone. But I think, and then obviously, when I did get my diagnosis, that was obviously dealing with that as well. So it was kind of doubly surreal. It was just, yeah, a very, very strange time that I'll never forget, for both those reasons.
Yeah. Now tell me, when you were presented with the diagnosis, just share with us, if you want to, what that was like for you.
Yeah, so as I say, it was kind of at the back of mind that it could be cancer, but obviously hoping it wasn't. But actually, when I had the colonoscopy, you see, like, they have screens up so you can actually see the inside of your bowel, which is very strange. And I didn't take sedation, so I was quite with it at the time. And I actually had the tumour was right at the bottom of my rectum, so it was almost as soon as they put the camera in that you could see that there was something there. It didn't look right. It was kind of like an angry red area. I mean, it didn't, I don't know what you would imagine a tumor looked like, but it wasn't really big or sticking out, but it was just, it was prominent. And yeah, I don't know. I think I maybe knew from then. And after the colonoscopy, the doctor that had done it, spoke to me about what he'd seen, and he said, oh, it's not conclusive. I don't know if it's something to worry about or not. But the take samples, and obviously that was tested, and then I had a couple of scans after that as well. And then it was 2 weeks later that I went, had an appointment with the consultant, when he, gave me the diagnosis. So I think I kind of knew before he told me. So I suppose it wasn't a complete shock when he told me, because I think I was maybe psyching myself up to it. But over those 2 weeks, I think it was a gradual, it was quite a hard, obviously a difficult thing to get your head around. But at the same time, because you do hear statistics that one in two people will get cancer in their lives. So I was kind of the, I know some people think, oh, I can't believe this has happened. And I was a bit like, well, it's going to happen to you. It does happen to a lot of people. So why not me? And then, obviously didn't know until I spoke to the consultant what the prognosis was and, how treatable it was. But I was just, I think I always, because it's such a hard thing to hear and to deal with, that if you look at it in a negative way, it just makes it even more difficult. I think, it's something that's difficult anyway. So why make it even more hard for yourself? I mean, I know not everyone's in that fortunate position that I was, that it was treatable, but I think I always kind of had as positive an outlook as I could. Yeah, I don't, I think I'm, I'm a half glass full person. So I'm always sort of hoping for, the positive outcomes, and until I'm told otherwise. So,
That's not a bad thing to have, and especially in that situation. Now, you were presented with a diagnosis. What did they say? Did they say an ostomy is on the cards? Did you know what a stoma was? Because I had no idea. I'd never heard the word stoma in my life before. I knew what it was when he explained it, but I didn't know the word.
yeah, I mean, I was aware of stomas because I actually know a few people that, before I had mine, I knew a few people that had one for different, it wasn't for cancer, it was actually for Crohn's disease. So I knew, like, it was life changing for them because they've been so ill with the Crohn's that once they had the stoma, I mean, it wasn't an instant fix, but once they got used to it, it made a big difference. So again, I think that really helped me sort of seeing other people in a positive position with having a stoma. So yeah, I was aware of it. And I think after I'd had the colonoscopy and started thinking, oh, it could be cancer, I did a bit of reading, but just, because I think that's something, it can be a bit dangerous, to go into Google and start looking at just sort of any information. But I was always going to, reputable, like Cancer Research UK or websites that you could trust. I didn't just sort of randomly Google. And so I was aware, especially because the tumour was so low in my rectum, that it was probably quite likely that I would need a stoma. So again, that gave me a couple of weeks to kind of, sort of mull that over and start to think that this could, be a real possibility. So obviously for somebody that hadn't even heard of one or didn't even think that was in the cards, it must be, a big shock. But for me, I kind of thought I'm probably going to have to get one. So yeah, I think that kind of helped, have a bit of, I mean, as I say, it was quite quick, the whole, between the different tests and getting the diagnosis, but it's still a bit of time to sort of start to get used to it until you really know. But yeah, so the consultant said that, yeah, confirmed it was a tumor. It was at the bottom of my rectum, and because it was so low down, often they'll try and, they'll cut it out, but they try and rejoin if it's your rectum or your bowel, whatever. They always try and do that, as much as they can, but it was too low down. There wasn't going to be anything to join it to. So he said there was no option for me. It wasn't even a discussion that could be had. So yeah, it was just that was going to be part of the surgery and the treatment for me. And at that point, they thought, like from the scans as well, that it hadn't spread anywhere. It looked like it was contained. It was, as I say, it was a positive outlook. I didn't need any, sometimes people need radiotherapy before, but ended up that I didn't need that. So it was just going to be straight to surgery, which was going to happen. I think that was, it ended up being about 3 weeks later. It was going to be 2 weeks, but just there was a little bit of extra planning because of what had gone into lockdown at that point. So, but still, I mean, that was really quick, and not a long time to get your head round. You're going under major surgery and you're going to have a stoma for the rest of your life. But it was, the main thing for me was that it was treatable and, straight, it's major surgery, but, for them, that's sort of standard thing. It was fairly straightforward. So I just felt really lucky that it had been picked up in time and that I could be treated for it.
And I mean, that's the important thing, especially about bowel cancer. It's a treatable cancer if it's picked up early. So
Yeah.
Early detection is really key. And for anyone listening out there, if you do have any of the systems that we've been talking about, do have it checked out. It's peace of mind as well. It doesn't necessarily mean it's cancer, but it's worth having it checked out because, believe you me, it's nothing you want to experience. And if you do have it diagnosed early enough, it's something that you can, like Jillian and myself and all my other guests that I've had on the show, you can still live a good and full life after diagnosis, after surgery.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Let's take it from when you woke up after surgery. Obviously, you were presented not just with the stoma, but also with, well, life after ostomy surgery.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, isn't it, going on when you go under general anaesthetic, because you're out really quickly, and then next thing you know, you've woken up, but it's like 3-4 hours later, so you've no idea what's happened in between. So I think I think there's definitely nurses there. I think the consultant came pretty quickly after that, and just to say it had all gone as expected and no issues. So, you know, that was good to hear as well. But obviously the main thing, as you say, was, you know, you wake up with a stoma, which is, even though I'd heard a bit about it, the stoma nurse had spoken to me beforehand as well, you know, just to explain a bit about it, and like using a stoma bag, a pouch as well, and sort of starting to get me used to that idea. But yeah, I was, it was a bit of a thought to actually look at it, because it's obviously a major change to your body. I didn't really know exactly what it was going to look like. You know, they do look slightly different on different people. So that was the one thing I was a bit anxious about, I guess. But the nurse, and I think they'd made sure, because I wasn't actually on a ward where they normally have bowel cancer patients, because they'd made sure that all cancer patients were away from any patients with COVID-19. So it was actually in a separate hospital. So, but they'd made sure that there was a nurse there that had experience of nursing patients with stomas. And she was brilliant. You know, she just put me at ease straight away. And she was so positive. And she said, "Oh, look, it looks like a rose." Because mine is very flush, like a lot of, you know, stomas are often protrude, you know, it's part of your bowel that is brought to the surface of the skin on your abdomen, and often it does protrude a bit, but I still don't know exactly why mine looks like it does, but it's very, very flush, just flat on my abdomen. And that was her, you know, sort of first words, "Oh, it looks like a rose." And I had a look and I thought, "Oh, it doesn't look that bad," because you always get a stoma bag that's clear after surgery, so they can keep an eye on it and make sure it's all looking okay. And after that, you know, it was fine. And, you know, a lot of people give their stoma a name, which I think helps. Well, people have various relationships with their stomas, depending on how they're behaving. But I think sometimes it helps to give it a name. And I had already planned a name for it. But then after she said that, I decided to call mine Rosie, because you said it looked like a rose. So it just, you know, it's little things like that just make a big difference and really help you start to get your head around it and get used to it and accept it. You know, now it's just a normal part of my body. I actually can't, even though it's been 6 years, but, and obviously I've lived more of my life without a stoma, but now I just can't really remember life before a stoma because I'm so used to it. It's strange.
I'm so agreeing with what you've said, because for me, it's exactly the same. I can't really imagine it without it anymore. It's so part of me. But I liked what you said. It's a part of acceptance as well. I've had guests on that said, "No, I'm not giving it a name because I'm not that type of person." Fine, nobody has to. But for me, I did it exactly the same. I also had to give it a name, and it made me accept it more, and I don't actually feel it's foreign anymore because I gave it a name. So that helped. I get that, and I like it. Rosie, that's nice. Yeah. So, yes, of course, we all had to then obviously learn what ostomy life is like. And I know, I remember in the beginning, it was such a big part of your daily routine.
Yeah.
I mean, now we can safely say it's just a very small part of your daily routine. But in the beginning, it's time to adjust. And what did that look like for you? I mean, it was pandemic time still, so let's talk about that. What was recovery like?
Yeah, so I was in hospital for about 8 days after the surgery, and there was a nurse that had come from the bowel cancer ward to sort of do active, sort of encourage me to do active recovery. So, the quicker you start getting up, start moving around, sort of start eating food, then it helps your it hasten your recovery, and it's shown to have you have a better and quicker recovery. And yeah, I think there's a lot of myths around, well, you can't eat food, like you're on liquids initially. But I mean, I was eating toast and having tea the next day, and they got me up and moving, like just very short, just within the room, but just building it up sort of each day. So then when I went home, because it was the pandemic, I wasn't going out anywhere. I was told to shield, so I wasn't able to really leave the house. Well, sorry, no, before the surgery, they told me to shield, so I wasn't able to leave the house, but I was after. But then that was when they were just recommending that you only went out once a day, for a walk. So I just very, very gradually started going out for really short walks. But because I'd had my rectum removed, it's, like your whole perineal area has been stitched up and it's quite tender, and I was on drugs, and so I wasn't able to move too much. So I felt like I was shuffling around like an old woman initially. But it's just, starting to get that movement. Obviously we're still healing. So yeah, it was very gradual, sort of just starting to move around and get out for walks, get fresh air. But I wasn't going anywhere else. I mean, I think I potentially could have done, but I just felt very wary about going anywhere else. And the just getting used to eating and what food you could have. And I suppose one thing that I think would be good to highlight is that it does take, your bowel doesn't like being disrupted or having, surgery. It does disrupt it quite a bit. So they do say that it takes it up to, around 3 months for your stoma to settle down. So if you're eating certain things in those first 3 months, just because it upsets your stoma at that time doesn't mean it will long term. And I always remember my stoma nurse said, try something 3 times before you discount it, because it's maybe not that food, it's just something that's happened that day, or if it is early on after your surgery. So it was quite a gradual sort of trying out different foods and seeing how I got on. But it does take a good few months for it to settle down. But then because I ended up having chemotherapy, because after the surgery and they did the pathology, it showed that I had stage 3 cancer, because they'd found a few cells in the lymph nodes, then it was recommended I had chemotherapy, which really, in anyone even without a stoma, upsets your gut. So that was quite tricky, because it started, was it 6 weeks after my surgery, I think. So it was still early days for my stoma. I was still getting used to it. It was taking a while for things to get moving, so I was on like taking prune juice to get my bowel moving, which only had to do for a few months. I kind of thought, oh, this is going to be me for the rest of my life, and it's not really a nice taste. But that was just initially. So again, it takes a while for it to settle down. And but yeah, the chemotherapy did really upset my gut. So it was only really after that, which was sort of about 5.5 months after my surgery, that I think it really properly settle down, and you start to get a sense of what it's going to be like, and if there is foods that you can't eat, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So 5, 6 months, I mean, that's actually a very, very, it's not even such a long time, if you think of what had happened to your body during that time, and obviously also chemotherapy. Now, what were the challenges that you were faced with afterwards? Surely work or travel, things that perhaps beforehand you never even gave it a second thought, but now being an ostomate might have presented a challenge.
Yeah, so I was off work the whole time I was having my treatment. I know some people, work through chemotherapy, but I did feel quite ill with it. So I just, didn't even try and work. So I was off work for about 6 months. So it was, but my employer re were really supportive and really good around all that, that wasn't an issue at all. And then I went back on a phased return. It was still the height of the pandemic, so things weren't quite normal. Everybody was working from home. I think in some ways it worked out well, not that obviously there was a pandemic, but it worked out well in my circumstance that I was at home a lot, because I think, in the early days of having a stoma, as I say, it doesn't always behave, or it's still settling down, then that can be quite challenging if you're out, at work or just out, shopping, whatever. It is a big worry, if it's got you're going to have a leak, or can you get to a toilet in time, and is there proper accessible toilets? So in that way, it gave me longer to get used to it. But I did worry a bit about, when we did start going back into the office and using the toilet at work. So we did have an accessible toilet in our office building. But then, having had a stoma, what you need for the toilet to be stoma friendly, as we call it. Our toilet didn't have that. So I had to work with my employer and again, they were very supportive of that and really keen to make the changes. But the thing is, it's, and I think not everybody realizes, but it's so simple, isn't it? That you just need a hook so you can hang up your stuff, a shelf, a clean shelf so you can put your equipment out to get ready, and obviously access to a sink and a mirror. But it just didn't have all of those. I think it was really just hooks that had to be put up, and it just makes such a difference. So once that was done, and the first time I changed my bag at work, it was, all went fine. And then that way, you didn't worry about it anymore, and that it was fine if you did have to do it at work, which I have, on several occasions, and it's not a big issue at all. Yeah, but I think it is a big worry, isn't it? Toilets for people when they're out and about.
Definitely. I mean that even if you have a system like I've used the Dantec system right from the beginning, it all works perfectly. But accidents still do happen regardless of having a great bag or not. Accidents do still happen, and you do want to make sure that you have the best or are in the best position at that time. And it's always on my radar, where is my next toilet? Even if I might not need it, it just makes me feel better if I know it is there. I liked what you said about having spoken to your employer beforehand and that they were supportive of it and that they also helped you to work around that, which I think is a big, big thing. And I'm sure it didn't come easy to talk about it, but I think it's necessary because I think most of the time people are open to it, but if they don't know about it, they can't act on it.
I think again, I was very lucky with my employer and, my line manager at the time, and HR were keeping in touch with me as well, because I had been off work, so they were checking in, and was liaising with them around doing a phased return to work. So it was actually, for me, it was quite a natural conversation to have. It was because I think they did actually ask me, is there anything you would need?
Oh,
You
good.
know, any support you would need to come back to work. So that was one of the things that I'd highlighted.
I mean, beforehand, I never even knew that those things had to be in place. Only once you're an ostomate do you actually think, oh, well, the hook would be perfect, because I've done bag changes where I've had all my equipment, if you could call it, under my arms because I couldn't put it anywhere. I didn't want to put it on the floor.
I
And
know.
you become quite inventive.
Yes,
It
yes.
shouldn't be like that, especially if there are disability toilets. There are also hidden disabilities like ours that have to be catered for, not just wheelchair accessible ones, but also the hidden disabilities. So if there's any employer listening, if have a check on what your disability toilet looks like. It's fairly simple, just a hook, like you said, just table or something where you can put your supplies on in a mirror.
It's just having enough room, because if you just go into a regular toilet, it's usually a separate stall, and you're not next to a sink, which you need as well. for your wipes and things. So again, I don't go anywhere without my stoma supply. Always have a couple of bags and, the various things that you need to change your bag with me. But one thing I carry as well is a little hook, the ones that you can just peel off the back and stick it
Oh, wow.
on the wall or the door. So just in case, because I have a little sort of fold up bag that has a hook on it with all my supplies in it. So then you'll put that on a hook as well if you don't have a shelf. But obviously having a shelf as well is preferable. But and then I think, well, and I would just leave it. I've never actually had to use it yet, but I would just leave it there. And then you think, well, then it's there for the next person. So it's just all these little things that as you say, you would never have thought about before, but you don't leave home without your extra stoma supplies just in case.
Exactly. I'd rather leave my lipstick and makeup at home.
Yeah, exactly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Gillian, we spoke about work. You've gone back to work, but you've done so much other things. Talk us through that. I know you're working closely with Colostomy UK. You write for the magazine. You raise awareness on a lot of levels. Talk to us about that.
Well, just before I was getting the surgery, and I spoke to the stoma nurse, and then obviously, saw her or spoke to her quite a few times after as well. And as I'd mentioned before, when I was sort of starting to think about if this would be bowel cancer, and I was looking for resources, but you want them to be reliable. So I asked the stoma nurse, where can I get more information? She'd send me out some stuff, but I said, where's a good place to look to get more information about it? And she said, oh, Colostomy UK, it's a national charity that supports ostomates, and their website's brilliant. There's so much information there. There's lots of different leaflets about different things. They've also got a Facebook group that you can join, and people there that have gone through stoma surgery, they're all at various stages, and really good support. I mean, it's a little bit, sometimes you kind of have to be wary of, people can sort of scaremonger a little bit, but it was really helpful for me, because you just don't, I mean, you've got the stoma nurse there, but you feel like you can't always be phone them up or sort of ask them every time you think of something. So it was a good place to know if something was normal or not. You'd maybe worry about something and think, oh, actually, that's quite normal. Or if you were facing an issue, then people would come up with suggestions or, what you can do about it. So yeah, I just found that enormously helpful. And I think it was just a few months after my surgery, looking at the Tidings magazine, I think somebody had given me a few, but you can get them online as well. And the volunteer coordinator at the time was asking for more people to join as volunteers, and they were sort of opening up to sort of different things or sort of saying, what would you think you could usefully do? So it wasn't something that specifically said, but because I do quite a lot of writing in my work, I'd sort of said, and because just this, I was still recovering, I thought, well, something I could easily do, is help write for the magazine. So they took me on. They were quite wary initially, I think, because they wouldn't just let anyone write for the magazine. And so they just kind of let me edit a few articles initially, but then they kind of said, oh yeah, I think we could write articles. So it was fairly soon after that I started writing articles for the magazine as well, which it depends. Like, some people send in their story and it's fairly well written. You might just have to tweak it a little bit. Other people just contact Colostomy UK, or they're aware of them through different circumstances, and ask, invite people to share their story. So sometimes you're starting from nothing. So, you interview them what their story is, and think about what's going to be interesting for the reader. But again, sort of trying to keep it on a fairly positive note, but at the same time being, truthful about challenges and things like that. But it's just find it so interesting, because I think, it's been such an eye-opener that there's so many different reasons why people have a stoma. Bowel cancer's, quite common reason, but obviously not the only reason. There's lots of different, other conditions, bowel conditions, or if people had trauma, or sometimes childbirth, things like that. But even if someone's had a similar reason, their story can be so different. So yeah, I just r really love it, really enjoy it. And it's, I think the magazine's very popular, Ostomates Relief find it useful and like hearing other people's stories. So I've been part of the editorial board for quite a few years now as well. So we have a discussion, the magazine's quarterly, so we have a discussion every quarter about the upcoming magazine and ideas for stories and who's going to take on what story. There's other Austemites that are part of it as well. But I think the, you know, Colostrum UK staff find it really helpful because they can sound things out with people that have a stoma. You know, is this, you know, a good story, or is, are there any sensitivities around it and all that kind of thing? So yeah, I really enjoy it. And they're, you know, they're a brilliant charity and really help a lot of people.
So anybody listening, do check it out. For interest, go to Colostomy UK. I think it's their common website, and I know they're on social media as well. And I remember I also looked into it in the beginning, and I also got the magazine, which I'm happy to receive. Like you said, it's quarterly all the time, and it's really very, very informative. So if you are newly diagnosed or if you are interested, just go to Colostomy UK and find the details there. So how did the ambassadorship for Danzig happen?
So I did a few talks for, it was actually through Colostomy UK. There was sort of national meetings in Scotland. I live in Edinburgh, so there's been a few meetings in Edinburgh where other stoma companies and people that are sort of involved in the industry get together to discuss certain things. And I've been asked a couple of times to share my story. So it was at that a couple of reps from Dansac had been there, and they didn't, you know, they've got a few, they had a few ambassadors already in the UK, but didn't have anyone in Scotland. So they approached me. They thought that I would be a good candidate. So yeah, it's something a bit different, but I think I just, the bags that I use, the Dansac ones, it's because my stoma's flush, I use convex bags. So again, it's, you know, people aren't always aware. I wasn't aware when I first got my stoma, even, you know, I'd had various information, but I didn't know that there was, you know, convex and bags, and that would actually help, because I was suffering, I was getting quite a lot of leaks. With the stoma bag initially, because I just had a standard bag, but as I say, because my stoma wasn't protruding, the output wasn't going into the bag properly. Yeah. And then the convex bag sort of pushes in a little bit and helps the stoma come out so that it's collecting into the bag properly. So that was, you know, again, it's like these little things make such a huge difference. So just, you know, so grateful that these bags exist. And I have eczema as well, and I did worry about, you know, because you obviously you stick the base plate that your bag attaches to, stick it onto your skin, and it's, you know, you wear them all the time, so it's there all the time. And I did think I was going to get skin problems, and but I've never had any issues with these bags. So, and I know they're, you know, they're made that way to, like, to be kind to your skin, but they're just, yeah, they're great. So again, I was, you know, was more than happy to sort of help Dansac around that, and yeah, be an ambassador for them.
For me, I also thought you're going to have this stuck on your skin for forever and ever. What will it do to you? But honestly, I can say I've also never had any problems. It's just always been good, and I found my bag. If you
yes.
That, and I won't change. I was so pleased to see that they've got the black bags now, which adds versatility and a bit of different color to Ostomy Life. And yeah, anybody listening, check out Dansac and shout out to them. A big shout out, obviously, from our side. We're almost at the end of the show. I always invite my guests to close with something they want to share with people that might be facing bowel cancer surgery, or, I mean, we are in Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, but also ostomy surgery, and that are scared of what their life will look like afterwards. Maybe you've got some myths to debunk.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we discussed earlier that definitely if there's any sort of symptoms or, you know, concerns, that to get that checked out early. I mean, that was absolutely the thing that obviously meant that I had a positive outcome. So you can't underestimate that at all. And I think some people feel a bit embarrassed going to the GP and talking about poo and their bowel. But, you know, GPs hear that and a lot more every day. They don't care. So I, you know, don't let that put you off. And I think people do worry about having colonoscopies, but again, they're not as bad. I mean, they're not the most, it's not something you would necessarily ask to get, but it's, they're not as bad as you would think. Actually, it's the, you know, doing the prep before the horrible drink you have to drink before is actually worse than the procedure itself. But again, it is such a key test for the doctors to kind of see your bowel properly and pick up any issues. So, again, don't put it off because you're scared to do that. And yeah, so hopefully, you know, if it is picked up early, the treatment, you know, it is very treatable. It's one of the most treatable cancers. And I mean, you don't always have to have a stoma from if you have bowel cancer, but it, you know, everybody's different. It just depends on your circumstances. But if you do have to have one, it is definitely not the end of the world. Hopefully, people will hear from why we've been talking so positively about it. It is difficult at first, absolutely. It takes a lot of getting used to. There's a lot of trial and error, either, you know, trying to find the right bag or trying to find what you can and can't eat. But I think there is quite a lot of myths around, you know, you can't eat, there's lots of things you can't eat with a stoma, which again, everybody's different. It's not a it's not black and white. So there, you know, there's a few things that I avoid because they don't agree very well with me, like beans and lentils, a couple of vegetables. But apart from that, I can pretty much eat, you know, what I could before. There's lots, you know, you see lots of things about, oh, you can't eat sweet corn, you can't eat nuts, so I can eat all of those. So you just have to try, keep trying things. But yeah, I think probably the recovery in the sort of physical recovery does take a wee while, and again, depending on your surgery. I just very gradually got back to exercise, you know, very gentle walking initially. I did get back to running, swimming. You know, some people worry about going swimming with a stoma bag, but you know, lots of people do that, and it's, you know, most people aren't really bothered about what you look like. So I think it's, and I suppose psychologically as well, it can be obviously, you know, having any cancer, it is quite a hard thing to deal with. And I say actually, because I had a positive prognosis, I think I was very focused on what was happening at the time, getting through my treatment, and I handled that all, you know, fairly well. But it was afterwards that it really hit me. I think it's, you know, you've gone through, after going through chemotherapy, and you've been going to lots of different appointments on a regular basis, and then all of a sudden that stops. And I think that's when it really hit me. And I did struggle with that quite a bit. But I went to Maggie's and they were great, you know, helping you around the psychological support as well. So again, that's something, you know, that's really important to seek some support for. And don't sort of struggle on your own.
For our international listeners, just tell us what Maggie's is.
Maggie's Centre, it's named after somebody that started a centre to provide support for people with cancer, so all types of cancer. And there's quite a few Maggie's centres across the UK, usually, you know, right beside the hospital. So in like a lot of the main cities, and there's always, you know, more and more being opened. But in Edinburgh there was a, yeah, Maggie's Centre right next to the hospital where I was getting my treatment, and it was actually one of the nurses had recommended to me. And yeah, they're fabulous. Yeah.
I take a lot of positives away. I like your outlook on life. I like your message as well. What I hear from it is also be kind to yourself, be kind to your body, because it's been through so much, and adapting might be different for the very easy for the one person, and the other person might take a little longer. It's quite a traumatic experience, and with any trauma, it takes time to get over it. And I think you've done a brilliant job. I love your positivity. The way you handled and tackled it, I think, is just something that a lot of people can learn from. Once again, thank you to Danzig for this takeover during Bowel Cancer Awareness Month. Danzig is a company dedicated to helping people living with a stoma live their best life through innovative ostomy care solutions. Their focus is extremely powerful, providing more choice and more confidence for ostomates every day. Once again, I think it's vitally important that our message is heard. I know it's being heard, but for anybody in doubt, if there are symptoms that persist, that cannot be explained away, have it checked out. And if a diagnosis like ours is presented to you, it is not the end of the world. It can be the beginning of a new life, a new outlook on life, and it is possible. Thank you so much, Gillian, for joining me on Stoma for Life. I wish you all the best going forward.
Thanks, bye.
Take care. All the best.